Good morning. We're doing the class on the laws of Shabbos. This morning our learning is dedicated to the Ilui Nishmas Ozer ben Alexander HaKoin, is Neshama Heaven Aliyah. HaMochek Otiyot HaKtuvot. We've moved from the task of writing to the task of erasing. One of the tasks in the Mishkan was erasing. Now, this is very interesting because in the Mishkan, where would they write? They would write on the beams which would build the Mishkan. They would write two letters on each beam, and it was a code. You knew where each beam went. Sometimes they'd make a mistake. They'd have to erase and write again. And this is not the only example where fixing a mistake is considered part of the task of building. Meaning, you have other examples. Korea, tearing, is also, you're tearing in order to fix a hole that was made by a moth. So you have to make the hole more fixable, because the hole might be round, and when you're going to sew it, so sewing a round hole is not so easy. So you make a tear in the round hole. So what we see is that fixing is a part of building to the point where it's considered a melacha chashuva, that this is an important task on Shabbos. So erasing on Shabbos is a melacha chashuva. That's an important task on Shabbos. And that to me was a very big boost spiritually. This idea that even when you're doing the most holy of tasks, building Hashem's home, you could expect you're going to make mistakes and have to fix them, and that's called part of the tasks of Shabbos. Erasing is part of the tasks of Shabbos. Very often we think, if I'm doing what's right, shouldn't I just get it right? And if Hashem wants me to do this, shouldn't Hashem make it that I don't make mistakes? And here you see, no, you're doing the most important task. You're building the Mishkan, very nice. You're going to make mistakes, and fixing those mistakes are part of the tasks of Shabbos. So mochek, erasing, is one of the tasks of Shabbos, because sometimes you'll get it wrong, and you'll have to erase what you wrote and write it again, and that's called part of the building of Shabbos. Yeah, erasing in order to write it more correctly is also one of the tasks. So again, this is one of those tasks where it's only a task when it's for the sake of fixing. Erasing is a biblical prohibition when I'm erasing in order to write something else there, not just to erase it. Just as putting out a fire is a biblical task when it's for the sake of turning on a new fire. You're putting it out to make the coals to turn on a new fire. And tearing is a task when it's for the sake of re-sewing. So we have a few examples of that in the laws of Shabbos. Yes? Yeah, it's for coals also. Yes.
So if you wanted to make something different, that would be a biblical prohibition. But if you wanted to repair, that's a rabbinic
prohibition. Right, yeah. Right.
I see.
Right. There are those that hold that just erasing it in order to fix it, if you have an extra letter and you erase it so that you get it right, that's also biblical. Now, it's not only erasing letters, it's also erasing a shape, it's erasing any writing. let's say you have ink that just spilled and you want to erase it so that you can write on that piece of parchment or on that paper. That's also a form of erasure. It's not only if you erase written letters, it's erasing something so that I can write in this place. so you have this idea also when you undo a knot. I'm undoing a knot in order to make a new knot. So that's also a task. Yeah. We have another criterion here, and that is that mochek has to be the opposite of kotev. So when is mochek chayav? when I'm erasing something that had the permanence of kotev. Last week we learned in the task of writing that it's only a biblical prohibition to write when I'm writing something that will have permanence. If it's going to be erased naturally in a minute, so then it's not biblically prohibited. So if I write in the sand, so that's something that won't last much too long. It's very clear that eventually the sand will fill in. That's not a biblical prohibition of writing. And so too, erasing that is not a biblical prohibition of erasing. So when is it biblically prohibited? I have to have two criteria. One is I'm erasing something for the sake of writing something else. And number two is I'm erasing something that had permanence had I not erased it. It would have stuck around. So if we discussed writing in the mist on the window, so erasing that is not a biblical prohibition because it didn't have permanence to begin with. So that's biblically, that's d'oraita. But midrabanan, so then it's all encompassing. Even if I wrote with ink, that would disappear after an hour. So it's still prohibited to erase that, midrabanan. And even if I'm not going to write something else in that place, it's rabbinically prohibited. Good morning, Ephraim.
Is it prohibited to write with it, just pure ink, or just to erase it?
No, so that's what we discussed in writing also, that that's rabbinically prohibited.
The way the hospital now is basically a form
of it. Right. So that we discussed over there, that there are different opinions of what level of permanence it has to have. Is it a day? Is it a week? There are different opinions. So they say, at least we'll go with the opinions that it has to last a week in order to be considered permanent. Okay, so where do we encounter this? One type of erasing is when you tear up something that's written. So let's say you're opening a food package. So you're allowed to tear to do mikalkel for the sake of Shabbos. I'm allowed to. When is it prohibited for me to tear something? When I'm tearing it into an exact size. When I'm tearing it in a destructive manner, like taking off the wrapper off a plastic cups, right? Or taking off the wrapper off of a cookie or a cake. So then when I do it in a destructive way, that would be rabbinically prohibited. I'm tearing off the wrapper. But if I'm doing it for the sake of food or for the sake of Shabbos, it's permitted. So I'm allowed to tear off the wrappers off food items and the like, provided that I'm not creating a new vessel. Where we run into a problem is where people sometimes tear and then they end up making a bag and then they sit there holding their popcorn bag, eating out of it. And even that, there are those who are lenient with like cutting open a bag of milk that here in Israel everyone does. Cutting open igloos here in Israel everyone does. So here in Israel, the lenient opinion of Rav Shlomo Zalman was accepted that a short-term usage is not called I made a vessel. That's why you see people will also open a bag of bamba and then use it, and then toss the bag. So they say, I didn't make a vessel on Shabbos. You see, I tossed it a minute later. Rav Feinstein didn't agree you're allowed to do that, but in Israel, people are lenient. People will even cut open a milk bag, which they're going to use for a day or two on Shabbos, and they hold that's okay. Okay, so just 1 second. So when I'm cutting open, when I'm tearing open a wrapping, so the wrapping has writing on it, and if I tear it in a way that I'm going to destroy that writing, so that's also a form of mochek that rabbinically I shouldn't do. So when I'm tearing open the packaging, I should pay attention not to tear up the letters, even though you'd say technically I could put the letters back together again, but that's still considered a form of erasing. So when we tear or cut open a packaging, sometimes that's why you would want to use scissors or a knife. You do it in a way where you're not cutting open through the letters. If you did it in a way that you took care not to cut the letters, and then you ended up cutting the letters, you didn't do anything wrong. Why? Because that's called misasik. I was busy trying to make it happen this way, and then it ended up happening that way. So that's misasik. That's like a guy who went to pick up a plant that was not planted. He thought it was detached from the ground, and after he picks up the flower, he discovers, hey, that was attached. I didn't notice, and I plucked the flower from the ground. So that's called misasik. I was busy trying to do one thing. And then turned out I did something else. So I didn't do anything wrong. You thought you were leaning back against the wall. You didn't realize there was a light switch. You turned on the light. You had zero intention for that task. So if I cut open a packaging in a way that I expect, I won't cut writing. And then I discover, hey, there was writing on the inside of the packaging that I didn't see, and I cut that. I didn't do any prohibition. But I do have to look at it and try to and do what I can so that I don't end up cutting letters. This has a few more applications, but first let's take a few questions. Everyone seems to have questions. Yeah, we'll go in order. Yaakov, yeah. No, all languages, yeah. Yeah, in all languages.
When you say it begins, then when you lean back and get the light switch, right, you obviously you're doing prohibition knowing, but you still theoretically have to bring a carpet head, right? It's accidental.
No, that's not even called shogeg. That's the difference. When I thought I was doing one thing, when does one consider that he did something by mistake? That's when either he didn't know it was prohibited, but he had intention for the task. He meant to turn on the light. He didn't know you're not allowed to turn on a light on Shabbos. Either he didn't know it's prohibited, or he forgot it was Shabbos. But where he thought the electricity was down, or he thought there was no light on in his refrigerator, and he opened the door, he had zero intention for the light to turn on. He thought, I'm just taking food out of the fridge. And then he discovers, oh, there was a light there. That's called misasek. That's, I had zero intention in this action for that task to happen.
You're stuck turning it off.
Right. Right, but
yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, that makes a big sense. Like, this is a complete accident, not just different. Right?
The definition of misasik is I was busy doing one action, which there was no, I in my mind, there was no reason to think that the outcome would be something else. I didn't know. I didn't know that they left the light on in their fridge. They asked me to get milk from the fridge. I opened the door. Then I discover, hey, when I opened the door, the light turned on. I had zero reason to expect that would happen. So even though I did the action, the guy picked up the flower. He was sure the flower wasn't attached to the ground. Then he discovers, hey, I just picked a flower. That's a biblical prohibition. No, it did not do a biblical, nor a rabbinic.
I like the refrigerator one a bit better. Because the other one, there's a certain degree of maybe negligence in the sense of, shouldn't you know? Shouldn't you check?
No, hey, I'm saying if you think you know. No, you think you know.
But the only one question I had before you that came up was just, it seems to be the custom here, I don't know if that much, if you screw up a grape juice tap, people put a hole in it for that.
We'll get to that in a second. That's, yes.
Coming up birthday is happy birthday.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get to that in a minute. That's it. Yes. Well, I don't think those are the two choices. I think you could use scissors and do it in a way that you won't make a vessel. But I think you should also realize you're living in Israel, and in Israel people rely on Rav Shlomo Zalman, and they do open milk bags on Shabbos all over. People open milk bags. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, you wouldn't be able to, you know, those ices that are igloos, even a regular ices, forget an igloo. The ices comes in a package, right? It has a sleeve. You open the top, and now you have a sleeve for your ices. According to Rav Moshe, you're not allowed to open the top. You'd have to open the top and the bottom at the same time. Meaning Rav Moshe says, the fact that in a minute you're going to toss that vessel is irrelevant. You're still not supposed to make that vessel on Shabbos. And here in Israel, they don't go with Rav Moshe. So, Baruch Hashem, you're living here. Enjoy your leniencies. I'm saying, that's what Rav Moshe would hold.
Right, okay.
But Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you don't need to. You're tossing it in a minute. That's not called making a vessel. What's mind-boggling to me is that it goes as far as a milk container, which is a vessel you are going to use. You're putting it back in the fridge. You're going to use it for another day or two till you finish your milk. And even there, Rav Shlomo Zalman permitted it. So. Yes? Right, so ideally you do it in one action, but meaning you continue the cut, but so long as it's very, very adjacent, that's also okay. Meaning, again, according to Rav Moshe, if you use the vessel for 1 minute, 2 minutes, that's already using a vessel, so... Adjacent, meaning it's okay, ideally a continuous flow. Ideally, you continue the cut. So it's all one process.
But if not, then at least before you use it at all. That's not
If not, then within the same, you're busy doing the same thing. You didn't stop doing it and do something else. Yes.
Just simply because one is residing outside of the land, one is residing in the land, and generally assume that those people residing in the land have a higher level of assistance, whatever, however you want to put it down.
This was a discussion in the Gaonic time period. There was a big argument between the court in Israel and the court in Babylon. And the court in Israel claimed they're the rabbis in Israel, their opinion should carry that weight. But the only time you have such a discussion is when we speak about a court. We don't say a single rabbi living in Israel will automatically have a greater weight than a rabbi in Chutz Laaretz. And furthermore, Rav Shlomo Zalman held personally that Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol HaDor. So he also held that Rav Moshe Feinstein was bigger than himself. They overlapped. And nonetheless, I'm saying there were responses that Rav Shlomo Zalman sent to Rav Moshe Feinstein and asked his permission to publish. Why does he have to do that? You know, he's his own rabbi. The people in Israel listened to him. Many of them never knew Rav Moshe Feinstein existed. And yet he said, no, I know Rav Moshe Feinstein's bigger than me. I want his permission before I publicize a response to disagreeing with him. So it's not this absolute formula, because you're in Israel, you win. You see in some of Rav Moshe Feinstein's responsa, he writes, you have a big rabbi in Israel. I don't know why you're sending me this question. You have Rav Shlomo Zalman. He begins his responsa with that. He says, yes. That what?
Introduction to Gerasimon.
I don't know what you're referring to. Yeah. Did you listen to our class on that? Okay. Okay. Right, so that's why I'm not sure. I don't know that it's the same. I'm saying when Rav Moshe writes it, and when Rav Shlomo Zalman writes it, they meant it as a halachic weight. In Igeres Teiman, which was a letter for the public, there can be other reasons to address their rabbi and say, you guys have a big rabbi, you don't need me, says the Rambam. I don't think Rambam really held that their rabbi came close to the Rambam. I'm saying there it was for the sake of the public, if he's going to write a response, so... he wanted to make sure they still respect their rabbi. Between Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe, these were private letters. Okay, I hear. Okay, so there's another application of this. Sometimes shuls have a paroches. Sometimes they have in front of the Arna Kodesh. They have, how would you say parochas in English?
Curtain.
A curtain? Okay, so some shuls used to have two curtains. That you would have a pasuk, half of the pasuk written on this side of the curtain, half the pasuk written on that side of the curtain. You open, you close the curtains. So are you forming words, or are you forming... So what's interesting is the Ramah writes that ideally you should not have writing on the side of the book. Many libraries will write the name of the library on the side of the pages, so that when you open the book, you don't see the name. But when you close the book, you see the name of that library. So the Ramah says, ideally, we don't do that. If you have no choice, you know, you're in the middle of a Harry Potter book and your whole Shabbos is going to be shot if you don't continue. So then you could rely on the lenient opinions. But ideally, first, you don't write on the side of the book. And if you do, then you try not to use that book on Shabbos. But that doesn't mean you have to spend all of Shabbos wringing your hands trying to figure out what happened. I don't know Harry Potter. I never read any of those books. But I guess the one figure there I do know is Harry Potter. If you want to know if he's going to live or die, you know, all of your Shabbos is destroyed as you try to figure out, is he going to get out of that spell? Yes. I don't know if he ever hits a spell, whatever. But I'm going by what I hear from you guys. So at any rate, so the Rama says, ideally you don't do it. And ideally, if you have a choice, you use a different book. But if you need that book, you're allowed to rely on the more lenient opinion, says in the Rama, and use such a book. So we do view it as I'm breaking up letters when I open up a book, or at least I view it as a minuscule form of breaking up letters when I open a book and close a book. So when I came to the Ashkenazi shul in Kochav Yaakov, I started using the Gemara Shulchan Aruch, and then one Shabbos I noticed on the side of the Gemara Shulchan Aruch there's a stamp with the name of the shul. So I brought a black magic marker, and the next week I just put black over the letters, and now there's no longer writing. You could open and close those books, even lechatchila. Yes. Right.
It's not a letter that was ever created in its entirety. So you're not really breaking up a letter. You're breaking up almost like a picture.
Agreed. So. Agreed. That's why there's room to be lenient, right? it's also, you're not really breaking it. It can always go back to what it was. Meaning, we don't say that if here in Israel we have those trisim, right? You have those shutters, right? So if you close the shutters, you created a fence. You close the door, you created a wall. The door's open, though there's a breach in the wall. You close the door, so we say, no, it has a hinge. That's what it's made for. You don't say, I'm creating something by that. On the flip side of that, if you have to install a door, that's prohibited on Shabbos. So when it's on its hinge, you can open and close it. When the window's on its hinge, you could open and close it. When the tris is on its wheel, you're allowed to let it down and pick it up. Now, when it's off, then I'm building something. So obviously there's an element where if it's on its hinge, that's what I'm doing. So in the letters also, in a second it's there, in a second it's not. Now you see it, now you don't. It's always there. It's in the same state. And still, there's an opinion that says you shouldn't. So we say, if I have an alternative, I prefer not to. If I have a choice where I'm going to put the stamp before Shabbos, I'm not going to put it on the side. Who, you were first. Yeah, Ephraim. Not you, they're behind you. Yeah.
Two and a quarter walls with sukkah with the doors, but it still has a piece. Can you close it on Shabbos?
So I want to see a picture, okay?
If they close the door, you'll create the third wall. You'll create half of the wall, which would be about sukkah.
I'm not sure. Right, I'm not sure what halacha would be there. Okay. Yes.
What was the final din for the parochet?
I didn't say. Yes. You'll leave that to the local Orthodox rabbi. It's his job. But there is a tshuva. Rav Moshe discusses it. Yes.
I think I had the same question. See here about the curtains.
Say that. So let's move on. So we discussed tearing letters as a form of erasing them. So we don't tear letters. Even though over here, again, it's not going to be biblical. You're not erasing for the sake of writing. After you've torn the letters, you're not going to write anything there. This also comes up when you're slicing your challah. If you have the note that says angels, Burmans, whatever, so you don't cut it. So today they don't even put the sticker on anymore on the Shabbos challahs. Right? On the Shabbos challahs they usually make their sign, their shape of their letter on the bottom of the challah or something. But lately I haven't seen angel stickers on the challahs because, again, you're not supposed to cut them, and then you have to pay attention. Am I cutting it? Am I not cutting it? The same would be true if there were writing on the peel. So they used to have, I haven't seen this lately, but they used to have stamps on the peels of fruits. So again, you have the rabbinic prohibition of tearing up that writing when you peel the fruits. You got to peel around it. Again, I haven't seen it lately, but you have the same issue. Now we come to cakes. Happy birthday, Jeff. Okay? So you have a writing on the cake. So then again, in Shulchan Aruch it says, in the in the cutting of the cake, then you shouldn't cut up words. Eating it, then there are lenient opinions that say there's no problem eating the writing. In the process of eating, that's okay. There is no problem here if it's a shape, if it's the shape of a flower and you're cutting it, that's okay. Here, the only problem would be if it's writing. What happens if it's the shape of the cake itself? So sometimes people want to be fancy, and they'll make the cake in the shape of Mazal Tov. So you'll have one cake in the shape of a Mem, and one cake in the shape of a Zion, and one cake in the shape of a Lamed. So each cake represents a letter, or you make one long cake in the shape of Mazal Tov. So then that's okay. If it's the body of the cake itself that forms the word, then I'm allowed to cut it. There are opinions that say you should cut between the letters. You could, if that works. I'm saying sometimes you can end up with a huge, a whole big mem cake. That's not going to work. Where you would probably, so today, many stores, what they'll do is they'll have like a plate of marzipan on top of the cake, and they'll write the writing on that. And then you could just lift that off and cut the rest of the cake. So that's one way they get around it. What else? What happens if you have sprinkles? So the sprinkles melt into the cake. So then, or today they have dyes that are edible dyes. So then you end up having a cake where part of the cake is the writing. It's not a separate writing. Your cake has on it. Today they have ink that's edible. You could have someone's picture. There are bakeries that will place a picture, or you could have a whole Megillah written on that cake, on the top of the cake, because they'll print it on. They have ways today of printing edible dye onto your cake, and it becomes part of the cake. Meaning, if it's separate, that's when you run into a problem. But if it's the cake itself, it's not a separate layer. It's not that, like in my days, right, you used to squeeze out the jelly, the icing, you used to squeeze it out in the shape of a letter. Today, they can make it that's a part of the cake itself. So then you have many opinions that say it's okay to eat it. That we don't consider that a separate letter. That's a cake. That's edible. Our only problem is when it's separate, when it's a layer. It's a separate layer. When it's part of the cake itself, then I can eat it. Yeah.
Separate layer using the icing to make letters?
I didn't follow?
Is when you make letters with big icing, is that considered a separate layer? That's not really part of the cake.
What do you mean by a big icing?
You take icing and you say Mazal Tov on the cake.
Right. So that's the problem.
That is more a problem.
That's where you have a problem. When you have icing that says a letter, so the icing is separate from the cake. So then, theoretically, it's not so yummy to do this. You could just slice it off, but you end up cutting the top part of the cake. It's really not, really detracts from the cake. I'm saying because usually the top part has chocolate icing or who knows what, and then it has this little slither of writing. You're going to try to take off the writing. You're going to end up taking all the top layer of chocolate icing. You're really going to destroy the cake. Your wife won't be happy with you. Ask your wife in the future to do it separately. I'm saying, or to write it in a corner where one person could get the piece with the writing on it. I'm saying again, in eating it, it's fine. Your kids will be fine licking off all that icing. You might not want to eat the cake after they lick it off. I'm saying in the form of eating, you can take off the writing. You can eat the writing. You're not supposed to cut it. As you're eating it, that's okay. But again, if it's going to take up the whole cake, Mazal Tov Bini, we love you. You know, you end up having the whole top of the cake is that writing. So once you're aware of it, there are ways around it. Today, all the bakeries and the observant areas, they know this. So they have their gimmicks. Either they'll use the dye that goes into the cake, or they'll do it on a separate layer. Today, Angels has where they'll put saran wrap on your cake, and then they'll put the icing on the saran wrap, so that on Shabbos you could just lift the saran wrap and eat the rest of the cake. So you have the icing separately. And again, your kid could lick it, because eating the writing is okay. It's just cutting it that's the problem. So they've come up with different gimmicks. When I was a kid, they had this piece of marzipan they'd write it all on, and then you could just lift the marzipan and eat that with the icing. Yes? So the Talmud discusses that the letters were codes, and the idea of erasing a letter being a biblical prohibition is meaning. So the Talmud discusses if you write the letter Aleph in order to mean Echad, so it gives that meaning. The letters, the reason that erasing a letter is a, or two letters is a biblical prohibition, is because of what the meaning it gives, not because of its intrinsic holiness. And that's why it doesn't matter what language I'm going to do it in, because what I'm erasing is something that had a meaning, and that's what matters here. The same thing in writing. The Talmud says if you write Shin Mem, and you mean to write Shmuel, you don't mean to write the word Shem. So you didn't finish the biblical task on Shabbos. You stopped in the middle. Yet if you mean to write Shem, you did a biblical task. The issue here is the meaning of the writing, not the holiness of the writing. Right. Yes? I didn't hear you? I'm not hearing you. I don't know.
Or the Chinese.
Right? I don't know. Right, I don't know how that would work. I mean, you're saying there can be pictures that have even more meaning than one word, right? I don't know. You know, if you have a picture of a man in front of a men's bathroom, so now that's many letters, that's men, right? Ish, Adam, Gever. Men's bathroom, saying there can be signs that have more meaning than one letter. I don't know, but if you remind me, I'll look. Just remind me during the week, Bezachim. I don't remember. Offhand, I don't remember a source, this way or that, of a picture that's worth 1,000 words and erasing that picture on Shabbos. I'm just trying to think if I have a source for it. Just a second. Nothing comes to mind right now. I have to think of that. Top. So we covered Moch.